Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. There's a bunch of new movies, some pretty good ones this week. We've got Zootopia, London Has Fallen, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, The Other Side of the Door, and The Boy and the Beast. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer bark, some box office predictions, and of course the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'll be lurking around at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First of all, a little bit of sad news. I just want to give a real quick rest in peace to George Kennedy. He died this week at the age of 91. I mean, this guy's been around since I was a kid. He was an old guy. When I was watching him on Dallas and in the Naked Gun movies, and I remember going back and watching Cool Hand Luke a couple years ago. You know, I mean, this guy has been around. At 91, that's a good run. So he was in some great movies. Sad to see him go. The next piece of news is a couple reactions about the Oscars. First off the bat, this came after the ceremony. The ratings came in. It had hit an 8-year low in terms of viewership. And I don't think this has anything to do with the boycott of Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith. I think that has a couple more factors involved, and there's multiple ones floating around. Fewer people are interested in watching a 4-hour award show padded out with nonsense. Especially in this day and age when there's so many other alternatives you can do. There's so many other things you can watch. You're not stuck with 3 channels. You don't have to watch the Oscars. And you can check them out online. In fact, that's what I do. I'm a movie professional and I have to watch these for my job. But what I end up doing is I end up setting up the DVR and then check the scores essentially online and see what happens throughout the night. And then when it comes time to brush up on what happened during the ceremony, I'll burn through that thing in about a half hour before I go to bed. Overall, though, I thought Chris Rock did well, and I don't think his hosting duties didn't have anything to do with the Oscars having such low ratings. I thought he did a fine job as host. It's not the first time he's done it. And actually, his monologue was pretty strong. I thought he did a pretty good job with the monologue. After the monologue is where it kind of got uncomfortable. All the racial jokes just kept falling flat. And it seemed to be like they're like, well, let's take advantage of Chris Rock and do all these Oscar so white jokes throughout the. And it just, they felt like it was patting somebody on the head going, oh, yeah, we understand. Yes, we know Oscar's so white. Move along. It was like either overly offensive at times, like the whole thing where he's interviewing black people about what movies they saw. I heard that may have been staged. I mean, completely. These were characters people had. Which then, at that point, what are you trying to do? Are you working with the narrative or against it? And then there was also things where he's just like beating a dead horse. So you're like, okay, we get it. You guys have a lot of white guilt about the Oscars. But other things, it just felt he was uncomfortable as a host. Like that bit where he's doing the Girl Scout cookie thing, I thought was cute. But, you know, you got to realize that felt so much like Ellen getting pizza the other year. It felt like we were retreading old material. In terms of my predictions, I did really well in the smaller categories, where I usually completely am total rubbish. But even for me, the ones I missed, like I did not predict Ex Machina was going to win for Best Visual Effects. I was predicting Mad Max. I wrote Mad Max, but part of my gut saying Ex Machina is going to get it. And the same thing with costume, where I picked Carol as my choice, but Mad Max got it. I thought that was not a big upset. And I picked Till It Happens to You as the best song because Stan Smith's god-awful Writing on the Wall was there and it ended up winning. It's a terrible song. And then finally, Spotlight. I almost wrote that down as my best original screenplay, but I figured Straight Outta Compton would be the white guilt voting block that would get that one. Where I was not good with my predictions was The Big Six. I was only batting 500 on that. I would never expect Iñárritu to win again, especially since he's Mexican in a year that only white people were nominated. Somehow he pulled that off. But also Mark Rylance. That was kind of a surprise, but it was well-earned. And Spotlight, I love Spotlight. It's one of my top 10 films of last year, so I'm not at all bothered by that win. Next piece of news, Suicide Squad 2 is going to shoot in 2017 with David Ayers and Will Smith. Just go back and listen to last week where I talked about Zack Snyder starting to film the Justice League Part 1 in April. It's kind of the same thing. They're kind of putting the cart before the horse. I mean, we don't even know if Suicide Squad's going to be a hit. It might be kind of a hit. We don't even know if Batman versus Superman's going to be a hit. But what if it's not a hit, or what if it's not a monster hit, or what if it's not kicking off the DC Cinematic Universe the way Warner Brothers wants it to? You're going to see them change things pretty quickly. And then Suicide Squad, that's still an unknown entity. We don't know what that's going to be like when people actually see the movie. It's not going to be like Deadpool. It's not going to be this laugh-out-loud, sardonically hilarious movie. It's Suicide Squad, directed by David Ayers, who doesn't have a shred of humor in him at all, at least what he puts on screen. And speaking of Justice League, apparently Zack Snyder wants to direct a George Washington film in the vein of 300. I can't even begin to wrap my brain around this. Is he going to have him running around in a loincloth? I mean, I really don't know how we're going to frame George Washington in this warrior setting. It just seems bizarre to me. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First one I want to hit is Finding Dory. The new trailer for this has dropped and it opens on June 17th.
Our field trip to the Stingray Migration.
Stingray Migration.
Migration is about going home, which is where you're from.
How do the stingrays all know where to go?
My mom, my dad, I have a family.
We will never forget you, Dory.
What if I forget you?
I miss them. You know what that feels like?
Yes.
Then we better get going.
This just looks simply adorable. This looks like everything people want out of another Finding Nemo movie. I was not initially a huge fan of Finding Nemo, but I grew to love it on video, mainly because my kid got it, and he just watched it all the time, and it was the one movie that I could watch over and over again, and it didn't kill me. So this one looks charming and fun, and it's probably going to be one of the biggest hits of the summer. Speaking of the summer, I'm also going to talk about Ghostbusters. That trailer dropped, much to the chagrin of a lot of people on the internet. It opens on July 15th.
We have dedicated our whole lives to studying the paranormal. Now there's sightings all over the city.
There are people out there that need our help.
I'm joining the club.
You guys are really smart about this science stuff, but I know New York.
Someone is creating a device that amplifies paranormal activity. And we might be the only ones who can stop it.
There's a bigger picture at hand here. These ghosts can possess the human form.
The weird news cycle that happens on Twitter for when trailers drop is kind of amazing, because it kind of happened here, but it happened so fast. The trailer drops, some people are excited, some people aren't. And the people that are excited are like, yeah, I kind of want to see this. And the people that aren't are saying, no, this looks stupid, this sucks, whatever. And then the people who want to see the movie suddenly start backlashing and yelling at the people who didn't like the movie. I hear people saying, don't judge it by the trailer. Wait till you see the movie before you start trashing it. I'm like, no, that's exactly what trailers are supposed to do. Trailers are supposed to give you an idea of what the movie's like. You're supposed to make a judgment on it. You're supposed to want to see the movie, but you cannot want to see the movie. You can completely judge a movie based on its trailer. Before you spend $10 to go see it. Now, I'm going to go see it no matter what, and I'm going to hopefully going to like it, because you're stupid if you're going in just wanting to hate a movie. I thought the trailer looked very slick. It looks like it's a high production value movie, and I'm not even bothered by the digital effects, because a lot of people are saying, well, the visual effects, they were practical in the original movie. What bothers me about it is just I didn't find some things very funny, and that seems to be a Paul Feig thing. I'm not a big fan of his delivery on certain things. But a black girl in it? I mean, really seriously, we got a bunch of scientists, and then suddenly not only the black girl shows up, but she shows up as a, well, I'm just a smart-talking, sassy woman who works down, I know New York City, and I work in the subway. I'm like, oh my God, this is like the most racist portrayal of anything. And maybe that's her shtick that she wants to bring to it, but, you know, at least Ernie Hudson in the original movie, he just was a guy looking for work. He didn't come walking in dressed like Superfly. I remember 1984 when the Ghostbusters first came out. It was this phenomenon. It kind of created this excitement of its own. And this is the studio trying to whip up excitement. And then people are just like, this is dumb. This doesn't look like the kind of movie I want to see. And then you have all these feminists out there going, you hate it because women are in it. No, I don't. Oh, that's what I got to say. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Zootopia and Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Kevin Carr here, going to be talking about some movie reviews. Let's jump right into these with Zootopia. In a world where animals live like humans, a rabbit gets a job as a cop and has to solve a case of missing creatures.
This is priority one.
Cops. Parking duty.
Yes. Sir, I'm not just some token bunny.
You strike out, you resign.
Deal. I'm here to ask you some questions about a case.
Then they should have gotten a real cop to solve it.
I have 36 hours left. We can only solve it together.
It's not about how badly you want something. It's about what you are capable of.
I am a real cop.
Never let them see that they get to you, you bunnies. So emotional.
Even though it's released by Disney, it's not a Pixar movie. This is actually done by Disney Animation, which did movies recently like Wreck-It Ralph, Frozen, Big Hero 6. And that's interesting to note because they're different than the Pixar movies. You can tell, if you actually watch all these films together, you can tell they feel much more like a traditional animated Disney film. And Pixar has their own sort of brand. And with the exception of like Brave and The Good Dinosaur, which really felt very Disney rather than Pixar, they really are quite different, and I just know that because I see all of them, and I love the animation that Disney has to offer. So this is done by Disney Animation, and it is a wholly original story, and that's kind of one of the things I like to see, and that's something you're seeing a lot in animated films. I mean, back in the day, it was Disney would do adaptations of fairy tales and children's books. Now we're getting, maybe this is based on some sort of level of children's book or children's material, but it's not a popularized princess version, which is great because it's nice to see Disney breaking away from just the very traditional Disney princess. You know, Lord knows, the Frozen was great and the characters in that were great and they fit in the Disney princess mold, but we don't need to have every single one about a princess. So this is a very different story and it's your basic cute animals acting like humans. And that's kind of what animation in general works for this, where you can always have cute characters. You don't have to worry about the uncanny valley of two human looking characters. This is just a charming, fun little, vibrant, exciting kids film. It's a cartoon that kids are going to like because it has the fluffy animals and it has jokes about how the different animals act. Because even though they're living together in peace and harmony, there is, of course, still, you know, rabbits are going to be rabbits and foxes are going to be foxes and to a degree. But then it also plays with those stereotypes, which is interesting because I actually heard somebody criticize this because they said for the fact that it's telling people you're not bound by necessarily the biology of who you are, you can be different and you're not necessarily going to be, for example, a sly fox if you're a fox, and you're not going to be a weak little bunny rabbit if you're a rabbit, but it does kind of find itself falling into that trap of them being stereotypes. And that I heard somebody make as a criticism, but I'm like, well, you know, in a way that kind of works in the bigger picture. Because if you want to talk about takeaways in terms of things that kids can learn from a movie like this, it's that sometimes you are your stereotype. Look, I'm a fat guy. I'm not even going to talk race. I'm a fat guy. Do I like to eat? Yes. Am I lazy? Yes. I'm not somebody who has ever experienced a runner's high, and I don't know if I ever would. One of my favorite pastimes is watching movies and watching television. And I go on cruises where I can sit around like a fat slug and eat at an all-night buffet. But that also doesn't mean that I fall into all the stereotypes of fat people. And that doesn't mean that I can't break out of them either. And that doesn't mean that just because I'm overweight, I am incapable of eating healthy. Because actually, I have a relatively healthy diet. My biggest problem is portion control and eating the stuff I shouldn't occasionally. I like candy, but I eat a well-balanced meal. It's just all the extra stuff that I have. And that's kind of what this movie teaches kids. If you want to talk about those teachable moments in a film, and that's really kind of nice. It's nice to acknowledge that you may or may not be the stereotype, but it's the really dangerous or aggressive or harmful stereotypes that you can choose not to be. And I think that's one of the nice things about Disney's Zootopia. Now, it's not just a kids movie. It's not just something the kids can take away a lesson. It's not a bad little detective story. I mean, there's a story going on here. It's not just fuzzy animals and jokes about fast rabbits and slow sloths. And that's good because it makes it not just bearable, but enjoyable and interesting to watch for the parents. And that's actually going to help. That's always helped animation. In fact, I saw this last week at a screening, and then I had to wait around for an hour, and then I saw 999, which, oh, by the way, this guy whose name, he goes by Gundark Hunter, was the first one to recognize my joke from last week about 999 being 01189998899991197253, which is a joke from the IT crowd. In England, 999 is the emergency number, and they change it to this long, complicated thing, and it's a joke. You can search IT crowd 999, and you'll find it on YouTube. So I'll be sending him a Blu-ray or DVD of his choice. But in regards to Zootopia versus 999, Zootopia actually had a better detective story in it. And it really wasn't supposed to be a detective story. It was supposed to be a kid's movie. And it is a detective story. But anyways, the bottom line is Zootopia is charming and well animated and clever and cute and adorable. And it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Based on the memoir of Kim Barker, Tina Fey plays a female journalist stationed in Afghanistan.
The network needs reporters on the ground in Afghanistan.
Listen to me now. This is where the foreign reporters live.
Welcome to the funhouse.
Miss Baker, this is an extreme environment.
Grenade, down, down!
It's bananas here. I don't think I can do this.
We are all here for a reason.
So what's your reason?
I just wanted out of my job.
I wanted out of my mildly depressive boyfriend.
Just wanted to blow everything up.
That's the most American white lady story I've ever heard.
This one wasn't screened for me. It was screened in limited markets, but it was not screened for me. And finally, when I saw it, I understood why. It's disjointed. If you actually watch the trailer's disjointed. And it very much feels like it's based on somebody's memoir. And the problem with a memoir turning it into a two-hour movie is there's not a real narrative feature to this. It sort of is this hodgepodge of tales of events in her life, and they try and put a plot to it. But every time they try and put a plot to it, a traditional plot, I found myself questioning whether that was real or that was just an invention of a screenwriter to make a coherent film. I mean, Tina Fey's fine in it. The acting's fine. The cast is pretty good. I mean, Tina Fey's is good, but it's just this weird hodgepodge of events that any single scene kind of has a point to it. But when you mash them all together, it becomes this patchwork of a film that doesn't have a real focus to it. And while it's trying to examine and deconstruct the American presence in Afghanistan in the early 2000s, it also completely fails at that. And it's almost like, somebody who wants to show the problems of poverty and just walks over and sees somebody begging in the streets and points to him and goes, uh-huh, see, we need to do something. And there's really no answers given. It's just an exposure of this. So, I mean, it's an interesting culture clash, but it's way too long for what it's not doing. And I was just bored with it. I halfway through, I was like, okay, I'm ready for this movie to end as much as I like the people involved. So I'm going to have to say Whiskey Tango Foxtrot kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about London Has Fallen and the Other Side of the Door.
Shake that.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing with the film reviews. Let's talk about London Has Fallen. Before the funeral of the British Prime Minister, a terrorist group takes out multiple world leaders and hunts down the American president in London.
Five of the world's leaders are now dead.
Stay with me. We'll get you out of here.
The American president is unaccounted for.
To our friends in the West.
Bakawe.
Number six on the 10 list.
What do you want?
Your president.
That's not going to happen.
Then every death from this moment forward will be on your head.
For those who don't know, because it's odd because I've talked to several people on the radio already, and some people kind of forget that there was this movie Olympus Has Fallen a couple years ago, mainly because White House Down was such a colossal bomb that I think it made everyone forget about Olympus Has Fallen, which was essentially the same plot, terrorists taking over the White House. But Olympus Has Fallen was kind of this surprise hit that did really well in the middle of nowhere. And it was Antoine Fuqua who directed it, and I like his stuff. They got another guy directing this one, but it's essentially the same deal. It feels very much like it's sharing a lot of connective tissue, which is good because it's a sequel. But Olympus Has Fallen got did very well, but it also got a lot of criticism saying, oh, people were using, throwing around terms like jingoistic, which is a $15 word for basically America can do no wrong and it's very one-sided. And I never really thought Olympus Has Fallen was like that. I mean, yeah, I mean, people were attacking the White House. You know, you attack the seat of government. It's okay to get behind a nationalistic stance at that point. The problem with Olympus Has Fallen, I'm going straight to my issue with it, is it does kind of get a little heavy-handed in that messaging. Like, there's a scene in there where, of course, they're Muslim terrorists, and he's got a gun, and he's yelling at this guy, and he basically says, in 1,000 years, we're going to be here, and we're still going to be standing. And I'm like, that's a bold statement, since, I mean, think 1,000 years ago, we were in the Dark Ages. So much has happened in the last 1,000 years that it's kind of hard to say that everything's going to be still standing in Western culture in general. And I think maybe they thought they had a little wider breadth with that because it takes place in London and it's not America, but it's still the American president. And it still deals with the tenuous relationship with Islamic nations. I mean, it tries to bring up stuff about, drone bombing and how that might cause more people to turn to terrorism. But it does have a very limited, sort of almost overly simplistic view. And my other big problem with the movie is there is this is a ridiculous film. It's you watch the movie and as things are going down, as the terrorist attacks are happening, you kind of sit there and look at it and say, this is utterly ridiculous. That it could be this widespread, that they could have bombs in so many places and coordinated so much. I mean, it looks like the coordination that Bane did in Dark Knight Rising was Mickey Mouse compared to this. I mean, they've taken over police officers. And I mean, in London, in England, you can't even have a gun as a police officer. You have tasers. I mean, they have SWAT teams and military, but the actual police officers don't carry weaponry with them. And the level of infiltration is so ridiculous, and there's like, you know, of course, oh, there's a mole, but one person can't hide all this. It is ludicrous to a certain point. I mean, Olympus Has Fallen was silly and ridiculous that a plane could be coming over the Atlantic Ocean, and they take that long to scramble defense jets, you know, to protect the capital of the United States. This thing was even just, I mean, it's absurd. But it's okay for that because I would not want to see a movie that presents a way to assassinate a dozen world leaders at once as plausible. It's kind of like when Air Force One came out, 20 years ago. And I remember seeing the movie and liking it, but I remember saying, it seems kind of ridiculous that this could happen. But even back then, when I saw Air Force One, I remember saying, you know, I wouldn't want it to be highly plausible that somebody could hijack Air Force One. That would be very troubling. So the Secret Service and the military and everybody who's involved in protecting the presidents have so much in place and have thought of so many contingencies that you kind of have to step into the realm of the absurd in order for one of these scenarios to actually work plausibly in a movie like this. So I'm okay with that. Ultimately, London Has Fallen, though, is still just a fun movie. I mean, it's a violent movie, and it harkens back to sort of those 80s movies. I ended up watching, I'd gotten to review Invasion USA, a Chuck Norris movie from the 80s, back the old canon films. And I was watching that this week as well. I ended up coming home from seeing London Had Fallen and started watching Invasion USA. And they're both equally overly violent and ridiculous and lots of gunplay and lots of explosions. There's way more CGI in this than probably needs to be. But when you get to the boots on the ground where you've got Gerard Butler doing his John McClane thing of being the one guy that can help stop these people, it's actually pretty entertaining. There's lots of explosions, and yeah, it's extremely violent. I mean, there's a lot of stabbing going on. And it's not something that, you know, somebody who doesn't like violent movies is going to like. My mom's not going to be seeing this movie anytime soon. But that's okay. It's not meant for her. And it's not meant for anyone else who doesn't like R-rated violent movies. I mean, if you're going to complain that this movie is too violent, this is ground-level combat. And that's just the scenario they're given. That's like trying to say that 13 Hours was too violent. I mean, it's a movie about warfare and combat and boots on the ground and people shooting at each other and blowing things up. So yeah, ultimately London Has Fallen fits that mold, and it's but it's also equally ludicrous. It's not a realistically true story, and that's a good thing. Like I said, you really don't want the president, whoever it is, going to London and getting attacked by terrorists. So ultimately I'm going to have to say that London Has Fallen kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Other Side of the Door. A grieving mother has a chance to talk to her son on the other side, but accidentally releases malevolent spirits.
What if I could bring your son back to you just one more time?
You will be able to speak to your son, but no matter what you do, you must not open the door.
Oliver, is that you?
I miss you too, Mom. Oliver! Oliver's come back, Mommy.
You have no idea what you have done.
You opened the door. You upset the balance between life and death.
This one was not screened for me. And apparently there was some shifting around of release dates as well, which is never a good sign. I was reading on Box Office Mojo that at the same time, either this year or the year before, Fox had released The Pyramid in this time frame. And it not only did it not open to no fanfare, it opened to almost a vacuum. The sort of the sound these movies make at this kind of release is the kind of silence you can only hear in deep space. This movie seems to be flying so far under the radar, they didn't even do Thursday night previews of this movie. And they've done Thursday night previews of a lot of movies. And now sometimes they don't do them for like kid movies, like the Peanuts movie didn't have one, and Kung Fu Panda 3 didn't have one. But a horror movie should have some form of early night preview. It did not. So on the plus side, this is an R-rated horror movie, which is always nice to see. But it looks like a very stereotypical ghost story. Creepy kids, creepy ghosts. I don't know how much the end result's going to be. I'm not a big fan of Callis, Sarah Callis, the woman who plays in it. She's on The Walking Dead and she was in Prison Break. We'll see. I may or may not see this one. It's sort of past its window for me. But since they didn't screen it for me and there's no way available for me to see it before talking to all of you great folks out there, I'm going to have to say this has to get a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for the reviews this segment. I've got one more review to do when I get back, and that is The Boy and the Beast, a new anime movie. And there's also going to be talk of the box office and the home cinema roundup when I return. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Finishing up the show, we've got one more movie to review and some box office and home cinema roundup, but let's jump into the movie first of all. And that is The Boy and the Beast. A runaway child stumbles into a world where beasts live like men and becomes an unlikely apprentice to a troubled warrior.
Poor boy, you must have wandered here by mistake somehow. Beasts and humans occupy different worlds, you see.
We were out amusing ourselves in the human world when we came across this youngling.
And what, you kidnapped him?
We didn't take him, he followed us. He's my apprentice as of today.
What?
Breakfast time!
Stop already!
I hope you are ready for some serious training!
Now show me how you did that.
Be your master.
I guess this counts as anime. Because it's a Japanese animated movie. But it's not Studio Ghibli, which most people will recognize Studio Ghibli because those get the widest releases. And those are the most charming, and those are the ones that I think have the greatest, widest range. I mean, you got movies like My Neighbor Totoro, and you got Spirited Away, and you got Howl's Moving Castle, and even you have more grown-up fare like The Wind Rises. But those are the most recognizable, I think, to an American audience because they got such wide acclaim over the last 10 or 15 years, but there's obviously so much more. And then what's interesting about how Japan does it is Japan has a whole group of animation studios that do just regular movies, but they're just animated. Whereas in America, if it's an animated movie, it's either going to be a kid's film or it's going to be some sort of very surreal, bizarre thing that the animation serves as a special effects. But in Japan, you'll get movies that could easily be shot as a live-action film. I mean, like Zootopia. We talked about Zootopia earlier. You can't shoot Zootopia as a live-action movie. You would get a totally different film. But you could have shot The Boy and the Beast as a regular traditional film. I mean, you'd have prosthetics with the Beast characters, but they're basically humanoid, and they just look like other animals. So it's a piece of Japanese animation that you normally wouldn't see in the West like this. Now, depending on the location, you go see it. If you're going to go see it in the theaters, you see it in Japanese with English subtitles, or you can see the dub version. I, of course, played the dub version for the trailer, because otherwise only the few people in the audience who speak Japanese would get it. But it works either way. I tend to like to see my anime dubbed because it's a lot easier to sync up the voices, and it doesn't seem as cheesy as some just live-action dubbing. But it's a neat movie either way, because while it does have these fantastical elements of this world where there are beasts and that live like humans, and they kind of just live in this separate world that they really don't define how you travel between the two. It's kind of a grounded story. It's kind of a coming of age story of this kid who grows up as an apprentice to this warrior beast who's kind of a bit of a slob himself, and he doesn't have his stuff together very well, and they sort of learn off of each other. It's a neat little story, and very much wrapped up in Japanese culture and some of the mysticism that you have in the past. And there's a lot of cultural things in here that I think would go over the head or around the head of a lot of Americans, including me. But it's still quite a good little movie. So if you have a chance to see it and you want to see something different that's been picking up a couple awards at some film festivals, check it out. The Boy and the Beast kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that Deadpool would win the box office once again with $23 million. I was somewhat close. Deadpool won with $31 million, which actually is really good for sort of like holding power. It's in its third week of release. By the time I'm done talking today, it's probably going to be well above $300 million, which is great. I mean, for a February release, R-rated February release, and then unfortunately for everybody else following it, this is now setting the benchmark for successful R-rated comic book movies. Gods of Egypt did not do terribly well with $14 million, which is okay for this kind of release, but pretty low for the kind of budget that it was taking. Triple Nine came in really disappointingly at 6.1, thank God, because that's a terrible movie. And Eddie the Eagle came in just under that, but Eddie the Eagle was in fewer theaters and much lower on the radar than Triple Nine was. Another thing to note about the box office this weekend, this is actually the first time since it opened that Star Wars was not in the top 10. Ironically, the same week that they announced the Blu-ray release date, which is in April. So, like, what, April 5th or something. It's, I think, goes on demand the 1st or the 3rd, and then it becomes available on DVD and Blu-ray on the 5th, which is great because you can now own Star Wars and get all 7 movies until they have the next one come out. This week, I think it's a pretty safe bet that Zootopia is going to win the box office. I'm going to say $65 million. That's kind of right in the middle of the range that I'm seeing in the 60s to the low 70s. And that's good. That's definitely a good opening for a March animated film. It's not on the level of like Toy Story, but this is not a tentpole release date. And part of the reason I think it's going to do well, it's the first real kiddie flick to come out since Kung Fu Panda 3. There's been like Deadpool and Triple Nine and The Witch and How to Be Single. These are all ones that have been out for the last couple weeks, but there hasn't been anything for the kids, so now they've got something which will then have legs throughout spring break to give a little bit of competition for Batman versus Superman. London Has Fallen is probably going to be around $25 million, and Whiskey Tango Foxtrot is going to be about $10 million, and then The Other Side of the Door is probably not even going to register on the meter. I doubt it's even going to break the top 10 due to shifting release dates and its limited run. Plus, there's no buzz anywhere. I don't think it's on anybody's radar. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now's the time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Couple big movies, especially considering Oscars were last week, and you've got Creed, which didn't win an Oscar, but of course Sylvester Stallone was supposed to win the Oscar until Mark Rylance snatched it out of his hands. But yes, Creed is now available on DVD and Blu-ray from Warner Brothers. This is the fine little Rocky film, and it works. As Chris Rock said, it's the first black Rocky, which is, you know, kind of a feat considering Rocky's opponents in the first three movies were all black dudes. There's also The Night Before, which is a Christmas movie, and I always find it odd when they release the Christmas movies from last year in the spring because it just seems like such a strange time to drop it. They might as well just hold on to it until November. But that is out, and that's, of course, Seth Rogen, Anthony Mackie, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing friends going out and tying one on Christmas Eve. Legend, which didn't get any awards or nominations, that's the one with Tom Hardy as both brothers, crime brothers in London. And then The Danish Girl, which did win an award. It was, of course, Alicia Vikander winning for The Danish Girl. She's the best thing in the movie. She's the reason to see this film. And then, of course, Youth, which is beautiful looking and not my cup of tea, but hey, if you like sort of that Italian extravagant filmmaking, that's available. Don Verdeen, I talked about that a couple months ago. And that one stars Sam Rockwell as a biblical artifact archaeologist who is falsifying his data. I enjoyed this one, actually, to a degree. It wasn't as good as like something quirky like Gentleman Broncos, which nobody else liked except me. But you know, Don Verdeen isn't terrible. I thought it was okay. It's worth checking out, especially for something different in a weird, dry, strange humor sort of way. There's also Miss You Already. I covered that a couple weeks ago. That stars Drew Barrymore and Toni Collette. Toni Collette plays a woman who was sort of the crazy friend of Drew Barrymore's, and she ends up finding out she has cancer, and so it's them dealing with this and how their friendship goes through so many changes, especially as they've gotten older and hit their 40s. Then there's The Boy, which, amazing, didn't that just come out? I thought that The Boy came out just a couple weeks ago. I mean, didn't that just come out? I mean, that came out in January. I'm looking it up now, January 22nd. That's when The Boy came out. That is probably the smallest window I have ever seen for a DVD or Blu-ray release outside of something like From Justin to Kelly, which I think even that was even like 10 years ago or more. And that was a ridiculously short release. I mean, you're talking, what, a month and a half? This thing barely made it into the theaters. Maybe I'll go check it out now. That's on DVD. There's also Childhood's End, which is, of course, the Arthur C. Clarke novel adapted for the Sci-Fi Channel. It was a miniseries. It is now available, the whole shebang, on DVD or Blu-ray. You can check that out. And then finally, Lego Star Wars Droid Tales, which is, of course, another great little element in the Lego Star Wars universe, which are very fun. They're goofy. They're silly. And I've always liked the stuff that Lego produces because it's essentially guys playing with them. And even in the computer-generated CGI full production budget world, it still feels like just a bunch of kids sitting around playing with Legos. And so it's always been fun to check those out. This is only available on DVD. It's not available on Blu-ray, unfortunately. That is it for this week. I need to take off. Next week, I'm going to be talking about 10 Cloverfield Lane, The Brothers Grimsby, and The Young Messiah. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.